Thank you, and welcome to everybody on the call and ladies and gentlemen in the room here. It isn't often that you get to make a presentation to the city and to the analysts such as yourselves and to interested parties where we can continue on with the good news that we've given out over the last 18 months since we started construction on our project. Can you move it on? But you'll see that standout figure from our results is we're announcing a 4p dividend today. Now, this goes with our dividend statement last December, where we said we would pay back to shareholders through dividends a minimum 20% of our attributable revenue from our Kunrad project. As at the point that the board considered the dividend payment this year, we've decided to pay back something of the order of 25% of our attributable revenue. How can we do this? Well, we've had an extremely strong first half year of operations. We produced 4,857 tons of cathode copper from the Kunrad project, and actually we've sold just over 5,000 tons. And the average price we receive for those 5,000 tons is around about the $7,000 per ton mark. So the attributable revenue to CAML, and bear in mind we only own 60% of the project, is around about $21.2 million. So having a $21.2 million revenue, we then have to look at our costs. At our full year results earlier this year, we announced the full year costs of around about 71 cents per pound, and you'll see here our C1 cash cost is maintained very much in the lowest quartile of cash cost producers, about 76 cents per pound. As at the end of June, the end of the period, we had $26.5 million in the bank and no debt. During the period, we also put onto the state balance and to JORC compliant resources the dumps from which we extract our copper, and we've quantified that at around about the 617,000 tons of contained copper. Doesn't mean to say that's all available for extraction, but certainly that is a massive number that is available to us to our existing operation, which is about 10,000 ton a year, and you can see that that would sustain an operation of current size of about 25 years. And of course, during the period as well, we announced at the end of June a revised transaction to acquire the 40% of the project we do not currently own. And again, in the presentation, we'll bring you up to date with where that timeline is and how things are going. But I think an important milestone that we've reached during this third quarter is that the project has generated, since we started 17 months ago, over $100 million of revenue. And given that we are only just now reaching the third year of our listing on AIM, we listed end of September in 2010, so we're 3 years into life, we've not only built our project, we've actually generated revenues of $100 million. And Nigel, when I hand over to him in a minute, will run through some of those figures. Okay. How has our performance been reflected in our share price? And this short slide shows our share price performance since the beginning of last year, and you'll see that we're up over 130%. Now, this is driven by production updates, achieving targets, coming in under budget, announcing share buyback programs, announcing share dividends. Start of the dividend beginning of December, you'll see a spike. Then we've maintained a price well above a pound ever since the beginning of the year. And now, obviously, this 4p dividend follows on from our performance in the previous year. And so you can see that we've worked hard at trying to maintain a stock price that our shareholders can have comfort in that it will deliver on its value. And that ultimately is affected by this graph, which shows any CEO would obviously show figures, statistics that show him in a good light. But I think that we've just taken our share price performance since the beginning of last year and compared us to a number of our peers in the marketplace, and you can see that we're pretty much a standout on a share price performance basis. In addition to having paid back something like $21 million in total to shareholders over the period. And with that, I will hand over to Nigel, who will run through the financial figures.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I guess really the financial performance in the first half of this year reflects two very distinct halves to it. I think both of those halves really represent the focus that we've applied to the business in trying to, you know, grow the shareholder value, provide value to the shareholders. Probably slightly unorthodox, but I'd like to start at the bottom and work my way upwards. If you look at the discontinued operations, basically split the business into two. We've got continuing operations, we've got the discontinued operations. On the discontinued operations, we haven't yet mentioned it, but effectively we have the expiry of the Allied Bayan license in Mongolia. And as many of you know, and it's been pretty well documented, I think, we've been trying to sell a couple of assets in Mongolia, Rin and Hangay, for quite some time now. And I think given the political and the regulatory uncertainties within the country, the board took a very prudent decision on that, that given the time it's taken thus far to get where we are, that we may as well write those assets down to a nil value. And I think in most of the analyst books, those values are actually at a nil value. So all the accounting treatment is doing is really reflecting that. However, I have to say that we have still got a presence in the country. We do intend to sell those assets for as much as we can ascertain for them or get from them, given the environment that we're in. But we've actually written them down from an accounting point of view, down to zero. No impact on cash whatsoever. And that's what obviously leads to our net loss of $5.1 million. But the really positive side of it is what we're doing there is addressing that problem. And now let's look to the future, which is our continuing operations, which is a really strong story. If you look at the top half on continuing operations there, just to reiterate, Kounrad, we still only own 60%, so we still only account for 60%. The assets, the liabilities, the income and the expenditure. And the table on the right-hand side just shows you what it would look like at 100% from the project level. And in the 6 months, the project itself delivered revenues of $35 million and an EBITDA of $25.5 million. That's a return of 72%. Which is a great return on your money and shows you why we decided to focus on that part of the business and put to bed the other aspects of the business as quickly as we possibly can. You can see the numbers for yourself there. Nick's already said we achieved $7,000 per ton, less than last year, but we have no control whatsoever over the copper price. So still at $7,000 per ton, as you can see from the cost there, be it cost of sales at 5.1 or the G&A at 3.4, we're still making it corporate level, at Camel's level, an EBITDA of 12.8 million, or an operating profit of 11.6 million, as you can see on the slide there. I guess the only thing, other thing that I want to point out on the income statement is a slight change of accounting from last year, and that's to do with the offtake deal with Traxys, which is what's known as an FTA contract, which means basically we load the wagons up with the copper at the factory gate, we then ship it off to Turkey, our end customers, and the responsibility and the title for that passes at the factory gate. Now, for tax reasons in Kazakhstan, we actually offset the copper price, the LME price, say $7,000 we get for that particular delivery. We allow Traxys $350 per ton to effectively pay for all the distribution and selling costs to get it to the end customer. And that, from a tax perspective, allows us then to offset it against corporation tax in Kazakhstan. Last year, we just reported the gross line, equivalent to 21.2. What we'll do in future, we'll report that line, but the net revenue that we actually receive is the 20.1. It's just the difference of the $350 per ton. And therefore, you'll see a slightly lower number. If you look at distribution and selling year on year, you will see that be a lot lower number. Effectively, it's a similar kind of number. We'll come on to the cost in a minute. Just want to move on one, please. As I said, really good EBITDA, 72% return on your money. Why are we making such a return on it? We can't influence the copper price. We can influence the costs, and we're still keeping our costs well within the lowest quartile of world producers. As Nick mentioned, 76 cents per pound of copper produced is a good number. Even if you choose to add the G&A at Balkhash, the local town where we have a, you know, general director, the council employees, support staff, it's still only 88 cents per dollar, still in the lowest quartile. Throw in depreciation, we're at $1.06, we're just about on the lowest quartile. So So whichever angle you choose to measure it at, we're a low-cost producer. And that's the main message from that. Yes, we've incurred a bit of inflation here and there. Power's gone up probably by about 25%, both in consumption. We are consuming a bit more power, and also it's costing more. Labour about 10%. But overall, in terms of managing the cost base, we're around about an 8% increase overall, period to period. Slightly not comparable periods, 6 months against an 8 months, but about an 8% increase, which is about the rate of inflation in Kazakhstan. Compare that to some of the bigger peers in Kazakhstan, we're pretty competitive. Boring, I know accountants love to talk about balance sheets. Pretty strong balance sheet, no debt, 100% equity financed, and returns to shareholders off the strength of the cash flow, as you can see there. Generated $13.2 million in terms of cash flow on a consolidated basis, but actually the cash flows are better than that at corporate basis, because as you know, the money that was used to finance the plant in the first place was done by intercompany loans between the head company and the operating companies down in Kazakhstan. We started off last year when we just about finished the plant and commissioned it, that the balance was about $57 million. And more or less by the end of this year, we're predicting that'll be down to zero. That's a return in about 21 months of operating, $57 million back to the head company to pay those loans off. That's a pretty good return on your money, actually. And what have we done with that money? Well, we will use it to invest in the business and grow the business. But in the meantime, we've returned it to shareholders. I won't labour the point. Nick's already mentioned it. But we're announcing a 4 pence dividend that's costing us $5.4 million. Affordable, we have $26.5 million in the bank as at June 30th. And it's a return over that period of 21.6 or 36% to shareholders from the IPO funds we raised. Last point, really. How are we doing on the ownership to 100%? Well, everything I've talked about so far is our 60% share of the project, effectively. We are working towards 100%. And just to refresh everybody's memories where we are on that, on the 27th of June, we announced a revised transaction. That was effectively to own the other 40% of the project by buying it off an individual called Kenes Rakishev in Kazakhstan for 21.2 million shares. The board approved those shares in July. We did anticipate that by the 30th of September, we'd have completed one element of it because, just to remind you, we operate the business through two legal entities in Kazakhstan. One's called KCC, which is basically the cathode copper producing plant, and that's not subject to regulatory approval. That's just like any private business, so you can do things reasonably quickly, with the plant. But the one that does take time is the SUC, as it's called, Sarikazna. That's got a subsoil user license in it, and everything, any change of ownership or whatever, has to go through government approval. That takes time, basically, in Kazakhstan. We had hoped by 30 September we'd have done the complete 100% transfer of this element of it. I have to say we haven't, but we're confident that by the end of the month we will complete that. The other side of it, well, we're progressing that and we're reasonably confident that by the end of March next year, end of Q1 next year, we'll have completed it. But what we have to do is three lots of waivers have to go into the Kazakh government. So you can see the degree of complexity involved. There's a waiver there, and once we've completed that waiver, and the statutory limit is 70 days to complete those. But trust me, nothing comes out of that government in 70 days. It really doesn't. So it probably will take a little bit longer than that. 70 days to get to there, and then we can put both of these waivers in. One to do the final transfer from Kenes to ourselves, and the final one is we have to have a waiver just to issue the shares. We've approved it at board level in the UK, but the Kazakh government has to approve it, and that will be another 70 days. So that's the update. Still confident 31st of March we'll complete it all. Reasonably confident by the end of October we'll do the KCC element. And the impact of the KCC element is that effectively from that date we will then incorporate 100% of the revenues, because most of the revenues is earned effectively by KCC selling the cathode copper. So that's an update on the transaction timeline. And with that, I'll hand over to Howard just to update us on the operations.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Just to go through these technical aspects relatively quickly, I think. In the first half of the year, we had a very strong, very stable, and a very efficient performance, meeting all of our internal budgets, and as Nick said, 4,857 tonnes, for the first 6 months of the year, very much in line with the 10,000 ton forecast. All of that copper came from the dumps 9 and 10, which are shown on this diagram. And we changed across to dump 6 in July, and we're now operating for the second half of the year on dumps 6 and 7. But during the period of operating dump 9 and 10, which was approximately the full 12 months, we were able to monitor its performance in terms of the extraction of the copper. And by the time we came to stand dump 9 and 10 down, and the graph on the right shows this, that we had in fact attained 90% of the planned recovery that we were forecast to, absolutely in line with all of our test work that we'd done prior to the project starting. This dump is now going to be what we call an arrest period. It will be resting through until March of 2014. After the winter's finished, we will come back and we're going to take up that last 10% to ensure that we get the full 100%. The diagram here just shows some blue blocks and a white block on the left-hand side of dump number 7. There are designated winter blocks, and they are now already completely fresh ore, ready for treatment through the coming winter, which will be starting within a month or 6 weeks. As I said, the operation was very stable and very strong. You can see on the right-hand slide, in dark blue, was our copper production in our first 6 months of operation, and the light blue is our production in the second half of the year. You'll see there that in the second quarter, we achieved over 3,100 tons of copper, which on a run rate, an annual run rate, is basically 12,000 tons a year, which is 20% above the nameplate capacity of the plant. The graph on the left, basically what you have is you've got a blue line and a red line. The blue line is effectively the amount of copper that is coming from the dumps on a daily basis. And the red line is the amount of copper that we're plating and turning into copper cathodes. You'll see here that this is the winter period where our flow rate actually has to reduce in the winter. I'll explain that in the next couple of slides. But our flow rate reduces, and consequently the amount of copper coming out on a daily basis is around 15 tons. As soon as spring comes, we start ramping up the flow rates onto the dumps, and you can see then that from March onwards, we had a very steady period of almost, in excess of 35 tons a day of copper coming out of the dumps. And our design for the plant actually is around about 28, 29 tons a day. So you can see that we're consistently producing above our design parameters. I mentioned there the impact of temperatures. The graph on the left shows two colors. The blue is the ambient outdoor temperature. The red is the temperature of the solution that we apply to the heaps. As you can see here, during the winter period, the average temperature over the period January to March was probably around about minus 18, minus 20 degrees. There was a few days, about 7 or 8 days, where it stayed at below minus 30, which I can tell you is very cold. And then it comes creeping up again. And then by April, May, we're running at sort of plus 20 degrees ambient. We're now starting to head down towards the winter temperatures again, around about 5, 10 degrees at the moment. But the red line shows that the solution that we apply to the dumps is maintained above 10 degrees. And this is exactly as we designed the plant. And this is because we have a heating system inside the plant that during the winter we bring on boilers. They take that solution, which comes back from the dumps at around about 0 degrees, 1 degree. We heat it up to 10, 12 degrees and reapply it to the dumps. And this is the key to our success in being able to operate through the winter period. Graph on the right-hand side The blue line is the PLS grade, which is coming off the dumps, and the red line is the PLS grade, the PLS flow rate. During the winter period, I mentioned we have these blocks of ore which were designated or coloured in blue. They're our winter blocks, and we have to stay on those blocks during the entire winter period because we cover them and there's a reduced area for leaching. So during that period, we run our flow rates relatively low in the region of between 300 and 400 cubic metres an hour. You'll see there that the PLS grade during that period, because we were static on the blocks, sort of fell, but came down from 2.5, 2.7, and then over the winter period, averaged around about 1.8 to 2 grams per litre, perfectly in order as we planned it. Come spring, we then move on to new blocks of ore, and as we do that, we get a boost in the PLS grade. As you can see, very quickly, for the space of a couple of weeks, we were back at the 4 grams, and then sort of allowed the grade to tail off during the course of the spring and summer period, to an average of between 2.5 and 3 grams per litre. But at the same time as we're doing that, we then start boosting our flow rate up onto the dumps. So you can see that red trend. And by about May, June, we were running on average about 850 cubic metres an hour through the plant. So as we said before, this plant is very flexible and it's completely designed to run in winter conditions and in summer conditions. In winter conditions, the aim is to keep running and keep producing copper at a steady but lower rate. And in summer, it's then really to push the amount of solution through and recover that shortfall in copper that we see in that period. And we do that very successfully. Just another couple of issues here. As you can see, that through the FX plant, our design recovery is scheduled for about 85%. Normally, we run at 85 or above. This recovery one is a little strange in that our circuit, we can change our circuit. And when we do that, we push more tonnage through, we actually drop the effective recovery of the copper from the dump. But we're not interested in that. All we're interested in at that point in time is maximizing the units of copper that we extract, if you can understand that difference. Then on the right-hand side, as I said, we're running very stably and very efficiently. The plant was designed for 94% plant availability. And as you can see, I'm not sure if there's a month that we haven't been operating up in the region of 97, 98. So plant, Chinese designed, lots of Chinese equipment, but operated extremely well by our people and proving itself as a good plant. On the technical side, we completed a number of milestones. The main one was getting the JORC resource completed. We did this in connection collaboration with Waddell Armstrong. Lots of drilling, lots of assaying. And the work was completed in March. And as you can see, we've got in the region of between the two areas, the eastern dumps and the western dumps, approximately 16,000 tons of copper, which is very close to what we had in the IPO, probably within about 2%. So we're very pleased at the outcome of that. And these resources have now been placed on the state balance. And in doing so, we had to pay what's called a commercial discovery bonus, which Nigel has already taken into account, 10 in the accounts. Operationally as well, we are very vigilant on the environmental impact of our operations. We have a full dedicated environmental and safety team. We appointed in June a full-time expatriate CSR director who's got great experience in former CIS countries and in Africa. We have over 88 monitoring boreholes situated at varying distances away from the trenches, and these are being sampled virtually constantly. And all the results are indicating that we are not seeing any passage of any of our solutions beyond our interceptor trench system. We've also been busy looking at potential expansion options. As you know, we're a very sort of cautious management team. We like to do things diligently and step by step and carefully. We've got a number of options open to us. First option would be to build a completely dedicated second plant down at the south. We've already looked at that. We've got the basic engineering ready for that. It would effectively be a mirror image of what we've built. This plant would require quite a little bit in terms of infrastructural requirements to it, in terms of water, in terms of bringing power to it, and a railway extension. But it's an option that we've got. The second option that we're looking at and kicking around is that what's the possibility of leaching a target area and then transferring that solution back to our existing plants and possibly expand the plant there and make use of surplus infrastructural capacity that we've got at the plant. So this option would involve pumping 12 kilometres either way, so 24 kilometres of pipeline would be involved. And all of our metallurgical testing in connection with this project is completed. And if we were to go down this particular route, we'd be looking at a designated area that we've denoted there on the map. But there's two points in that we've got to consider in taking any decision on this. And the first is, we're not going to do anything until the SAT-KENES deal is completed, until the full ownership of the project is within our remit. We won't be taking any decisions on this. Second thing is that we've been doing a lot of geohydrology work on this particular area and in the eastern area. We've had various external consultants in. And the ground conditions here on the west are different to the ground on the east. And so it's very probable that not only would we need an interceptor trench here, but we'd probably need some very specific sort of boreholes in various places that if there was any passage beyond that trench, we'd intercept them with boreholes. So that is something that we really need to look at more. We're looking at it over the next 3 months and into the first 3 or 4 months of next year. But, you know, I've had long discussions with Nick and what have you, and Nick and Nigel, and as soon as we know what the situation is with the SAT deal, we will be in a position technically to move forward in the most optimum way that we believe for all shareholders.
Okay.
And that's it.
I'll just wrap up then with looking forward. Obviously, our 4 pence dividend, I think, is a standout. 25% of the attributable revenue we're putting back. We are on target for the 10,000 tonnes for this year. As at the end of this month, I know this is a bit of a forward-looking statement because we've got 3 or 4 days yet to run on the plant, but we're looking at 7,800 tonnes to the end of September for this year, so that means we have about 2,200 tonnes remaining for production in the last 3 months of the year. And as Howard said, we're well prepared for the onset of winter. We have our blocks prepared, and we expect, having learnt a lot from last winter, that we will perform better this coming winter. Interestingly, as at the end of this month, September, we will have produced 14,400 tons of copper from Kounrad. Now, bear in mind, we've only been going 17 months. So in 17 months, we've produced 145% of a two-year run. So we're pretty much, allowing for commissioning and ramp-up and start-up problems, we've pretty much been on song since the day we started. Our aim is, going forward, always to concentrate on this. Nigel mentioned Mongolia, and you know, we have a couple of assets there. We will look to realize some value for those.
but we don't intend to commit any serious capital in that part of the world at this time. We want to maintain our position as a low-cost producer. Our cash at the end of yesterday was $42.7 million. $42.7. Now, Nigel mentioned that the total money we've returned to shareholders, including that 4p dividend, last year's dividend, the special dividend we paid, is $21.6 million, which is 36% of the money we raised at IPO. Interesting statistic, if you add in our cash, you know, that's we've got more, we pay back more to shareholders in cash than the money we raised at IPO less than 3 years ago. I mean, that is a fairly good number. Based on the basis, I have an operating plant that is cash flowing now, almost, you know, with a 76 cent cost of production, C1 cash cost, good margins, good business to be in. And you can see why then we're concentrating our human resources and our financial resources in looking at this sort of area. Important that we deliver on our remaining 40% in Kounrad. Obviously, that is something that market wants to see. We're working very much with Kenneth Rakishev in delivering that. Next week, Nigel, I, and Howard are out to Kazakhstan. We have a board meeting there where we're hoping to be meeting with Kenneth and looking at ways and means of getting this transaction to move along a little faster if we can. Howard's been through the plant expansion. We have a number of options there. What we will be doing is taking a decision based on the best returns to shareholders in terms of capital intensity. It may not be a doubling. It may be 50 or 60%. But those are the options that we're playing with because we do, one, it has an effect on operating costs. We want to maintain ourselves very much in the lowest cash cost quartile of operations because that's where we see the strength being in maintaining our margins. And obviously, you know, we've been asked over, you know, the last few days, weeks, we've got some money in the bank. We're successful at what we've done. Are we looking at other opportunities? And I think the answer is yes. We've said in a couple of press releases that we have interest in looking at others, but we're not going to rush out and do anything because we don't want to spoil the sort of good start we've made in delivering on Kounrad. We don't want to be staking money that Kounrad is generating that we're giving back to shareholders to do anything inappropriate. We will look. If there's good opportunities out there, then obviously we would be interested in looking at them. At the moment, we don't have anything, but we always keep our eyes and ears open. And just to leave you with the fact that in under 18 months of operations, within 3 years of starting out as an AIM company, we've generated project revenues over $100 million. And I don't think we can say anything more than that. We really couldn't do more than that. Except that with our dividend policy, we're putting as much back to shareholders as we possibly can. Now, there are some appendices in the presentation, and we'll welcome any questions from the floor. Next.
Hi, Nick. Probably Nick, you put your hand up first, then.
Just on the expansion options,
No. I can't give you those. And the thing is, it's not quite as simple because there are additional issues to deal with both options. One is pumping a long distance, which has a capital cost of, you know, pipelines and whatever. But that has an additional effect on operating costs because you've got more electricity in pumping, whereas a standalone plant. Separate issues, like infrastructure. So I don't think it's quite as easy. Well, we can't give that. I'm not going to give it to you anyway. But it's not. There's a lot of work still to be done on finessing those numbers.
Sorry to interrupt. This is the operator speaking. Just to advise that the audio participants are not able to hear the questions coming from the room.
All
also,
right.
If any of the audio participants would already like to register for a question, they may press star followed by one on their telephone.
Okay, thank you. For the those on the telephone, the question was from the floor, could we give any more information about the capital differences between the two options? that were presented in the presentation just now, and you heard the answer, which was we're not in a position to give them because they both have differing aspects to them.
Thank you.
And the question is the implementation times for each. Is there much time saved by going down one route as opposed to another? Because of seasonal differences, a seasonal effect on construction times, little difference probably? 3-6 months maybe?
Yeah, 3 to 6 months. I mean, the standalone plant would take exactly the same amount of time that the first one took.
20 months.
Yeah. But the option, the alternative option, you know, you could be working in two locations at the same time and probably get a benefit on timing in that respect.
Louise, yeah.
Yeah, the question was, do we include mineral extraction tax, which is a 5.7% tax effectively levied by the Kazakh government on the value of the copper that you extract from any mine in Kazakhstan? And the answer is yes, that is included in the C1, 76 cents per pound.
Right. And just on, I think you've done a lot of opportunities, given your, and obviously I understand you've got a sizable resource there, Conrad, you've got
the question was, are there other opportunities with comparable stats dumps available in Kazakhstan? There are other dumps. However, Kounrad is unique in a number of areas, one of which is the subsurface conditions, which is very close rock cap to the surface. A water table very close to the surface, which allows us to, you know, minimize or maximize recovery of solution. And a lack of clay in the mineralogy, which allows a good permeability to occur within the dumps. And so it is a combination of factors that allowed us to monetize the dumps at Kounrad. Bear in mind that the dumps grade we're looking at is 0.15, 0.1% copper. Nowhere else do they really extract economic copper on such levels as we've achieved. But we can do it because we did a lot of test work at risk prior to IPO. So we got the numbers right beforehand. Are there other places in Kazakhstan? Might well be, but they would take 2 or 3 years of test work, I suspect, before you'd have the confidence to say, yeah, you could replicate it. But it doesn't say we don't look. Yeah.
Similar site, add-on question to that. The northern dumps at Kounrad, which are currently under the control of Kazakhstan, is going to pull out here in the next couple of years. Have you had any discussion about taking those on?
Question was about the northern dumps, which are not within our control, but owned by Kazakh MIS. We haven't had any discussions with them, or substantive discussions with them, should I say. Have we discussed the matter with operational personnel within the region? Yes, we have. It's safe to say. But they don't necessarily speak for corporate. Our understanding is that they are still operating the Kounrad dump, but equally, the Kounrad pit. But equally, I think they have had some operational problems there, which are reported by themselves, not least of which is I don't think they're making any money at them. And so I think they're probably questioning whether or not they continue to operate. And we have heard locally that there are they want to be less involved in that area. Is there going to be an opportunity for us in the future? I certainly hope so, but nothing as yet.
9 and what you're currently learning in terms of experiences from Dump 9 and 10 in the context of your statement that the resources will support current extraction for 25 years. I'm assuming that means that sulfide is technically feasible, whereas you contemplate the question of deciding on the right and the most optimal option.
Yeah, the question was about whether or not we get the same sort of recoveries that we get on 9 and 10 in other dumps, and other dumps in themselves capable of sustaining a 25-year life at 10,000 tonnes per annum. I think I'll answer part, and I'll hand over to Howard. You know, oxides we can recover 40 to 50%. Sulfides we know we can recover. We know we recover less. So if you take 600,000, and you look at, say, a 40% recovery overall, you get 240,000 tons recovered, potentially 10,000 ton a year. That's giving you a 10-year life. And so are we confident we can recover from sulfides? Yes, we are.
Yeah, we've done a lot of metallurgical testing and detailed review of the results from that testing. And we're fairly confident we can get 35%. Out of the western dumps. When it was designated during the mining process, they sort of labeled it as being sulfidic with sort of less than 10% or less than 15% acid soluble copper. But all of our test work that we've been doing has been indicating we can get 35% over a longer time frame, whereas with the oxides we can push it, but as you can see actually in practice, we can get up to at least 45% within a sort of like 12 or 15 month period. On the sulfides, we would be looking at somewhere between 18 and 24 months to get that 35%. And probably the way we would manage that would be that we'd take the first 30% of it relatively quickly within the 12 months, first 12 months. And then because the dump area is so large, we'd then move away and leave natural leaching activities to go on in the remainder of the dump for maybe 1 or even 2 years, and then come back to those previously leached areas and pick up at least another 5%. So we're confident that we can get between 30 and 35% of the copper out of the western dumps.
You also asked about acid consumption, I think, Morris.
Yeah, all of the test work now that we've done is confirming that, in fact, the western dumps will be virtually acid neutral, so that we won't require enormous amounts of acid. There's a lot of pyrite in those dumps, a lot of bacteria. They generate their own acid. And we're finding this on the eastern dumps as well. Our acid consumption is very much in line with what we've forecast at about 0.4 of a kilo per ton of copper, a number that was viewed with skepticism by a lot of people prior to starting up, but we were confident those numbers were correct from all of the test work that we've done. So we're confident on the western side as well.
And just to go back to, the question, Louise, you asked about other dumps, you know, our acid consumption per unit of copper is very low internationally. Many dump leach operations or heap leach operations operate in tons of acid per tons of copper. We're less than 0.4 of a ton of acid per ton of copper. And that looks to be, originally we thought that the western dumps would be much higher, orders of magnitude higher, but they're not. They're pretty much on song. And because of the mineralogy, we actually, as Howard said, are looking to have an acid neutral leach cycle.
The question is it reasonable to expect now, because on last year and this year we've done 30% and now 25%, is it reasonable to expect it to be above 20%? I don't think it's fair to say that that is the case necessarily. I think we assess it each situation as it occurs, really. I mean, as you know, as I mentioned in my presentation, we have got a priority repayment of intercompany loans, which is if you like, increases the cash flow that we've generated from the business in terms of just pure results you see from a consolidated basis. That's not to say in the future we won't keep it at 25%, but I think when we looked at it in the first instance, we specifically set a basement, otherwise people will expect 25%. So I think, you know, the policy is a minimum of 20%, and we will stick with that. The other caveat that I must remind you is that we have 3x cash cover on that, so we're prudent in that respect. The fact that we've chosen to do 25% is simply, at the moment, with the, I suppose, the elongation of the Kounrad transaction with Guinness Record Chef, and the fact that we're not going to commit funds to an expansion, we have a, you know, an embarrassment of riches, effectively, and we think it's prudent to give that back to shareholders at the moment, until such time as we do actively go for some of these other opportunities we discussed, and which will happen in the future, but it's hard to know the exact timeline.
Are there any questions from the on the phone?
There are no questions at this moment, sir. However, if any other participant would like to ask a question, you may now press the star followed by the one on your telephone. One moment for the registration of the questions. So there seem to be no questions from the audio lines.
There's no more questions from the room?
Okay.
Lovely.
Thank you
very much indeed. On the phone, thank you for attending. And in the room, thank you.